Welcome to the Entrepreneurs Visiting Victor podcast with Victor Dadage, where you'll hear stories and strategies to help increase your sales and grow your business. Here's your host, Victor Dadage.
All right, welcome to Entrepreneurs Visiting Victor. I'm your host, Victor Dadage. I hope you're having an amazing day so far. Today we have an awesome guest. This guy is a true legend in the network marketing industry. He's been doing it for over 45 years. He's made tons of money, many millions of dollars, and he has 200 millionaires on his team. So he's helped a lot of other people to succeed. So he's going to share a lot of great wealth and knowledge, and I'm really looking forward to listening to what he has to share with us. So let's welcome Jeff Al Gilbert. How are you doing today, Jeff?
Great, Victor. Great. We had strong wind storms last night, 90 miles per hour here in the mountains, but yeah, we still got a house, so we're doing good.
Okay, I'm glad to hear everything went okay and you guys survived it. So, Jeff, I'd like to get started by asking you to please share your story. How did you wind up getting into the entrepreneurial field and being a network marketer?
Yeah, so it was like I was telling one of the boys that works here around the house, you know. He was asking about my son that, you know, he doesn't really like to work. I said, well, at his age, I didn't like to work either. No, I didn't like to work. My father, he would, you know, try to get me to do things over at the factory. And, you know, I was a rock drummer and all that, you know, just teenagers. So back then, but it's funny how things change in your life. And later, when I graduated from high school and I went into college, it didn't take me long to realize this is not for me. Now, I didn't know exactly what was for me. I just knew this was not for me. And, you know, none of it made sense to me because I thought, okay, if I get a degree, then I get a job and then what, you know, and I'm stuck somewhere for the rest of my life. So, and so basically what I did started doing it, I started going out and just doing window cleaning. I just went door to door knocking, say, hey, I'll do your windows for $100. And they're, oh, really? Okay. You got it. You know, back then, you know, we're talking, that was a long time ago, you know, 47, 48 years ago. Right. So, but I would do things that way I owned my time. That was important to me, owning my time. Now, later I started listening to Earl Nightingale, and Earl Nightingale, if no one's ever listened to him, you should do that. But, you know, Earl Nightingale belonged to Conant. I started a company, Conant Nightingale. And so I started listening to that, Jim Rohn, and those became the mentors for Tony Robbins, you know. But back then, you know, like I said, I had a cleaning business. And so I would listen to those cassettes and my wife then would say, no, why are you listening to those cassettes? How is that going to help you clean something better? And I said, I don't know. It just makes me feel good listening to it. So I didn't know we call that personal development, but that's not what they called it back then so much. It was just feel good psychology, I guess. And so how I developed again. So you asked the question about being an entrepreneur. That was basically how it was, where I could own my time, go out. I had a cleaning business, then I had employees working for me, but I was listening to these cassettes and it was always possibility thinking. What else can I do other than this? And then, of course, in 1977, I was introduced to Forever Living Products. And so that was a guy signed me up. I didn't know anything about it. I bought a case of jugs of aloe vera juice. And I said, what do I do? He said, go sell it. So I did. And then, you know, when I get back with the people, they'd say, man, it tastes terrible. And I call my sponsor. I said, they say it tastes terrible. Well, put it in orange juice, whatever. You know, it's healthy, you know. And so I don't know if you can see it, but on my wall, right by the door there is a payphone booth. Mm-hmm. And so that's just a reminder of those days when I used to put a dime in and I would call somebody and say, hey, you want to buy some more juice? And so that was how I got started.
Wow. No, thanks, sir. Basically, in your college years, you didn't know what you wanted to, but you know you wanted to own your time, which is what a lot of entrepreneurs wanted to do. Because usually when you work a regular job, 9 to 5, whatever, you don't own your time. Someone else owns it. And so you start out by doing window cleaning. You went door to door asking people, "Hey, you want your windows cleaned? I'll do it for $100." And you know, some people would say, "Yeah, sure, sounds good." And then later on, you started listening to people like Earl Nightingale. And I definitely love him. He's a great guy. The Stranger's Secret. I could listen to that all day. It's great. I think it's influenced so many millions of people. It's a great recording. You can just get on YouTube and listen to it. Some really good stuff. And then your first venture was with Forever Living Products. And someone said it tasted terrible. And your sponsor said, put in some orange juice. And it was your first taste. And you mentioned in the back, you have that payphone. And when you started back in the 70s, it was a totally different time for this industry, for network marketing, because you didn't have all these things, these electronic things. You have Zoom, Skype, Facebook, all that stuff. It was basically putting ads in newspapers, calling people up, driving all over the country to meet up with people. So it was a much more difficult time. It was harder to meet up with people. You had cassettes, VHS, because VHS came a little bit later, but it was talk a little bit how it was in those early years, because I had some because sometimes people getting started today didn't realize that they have a lot of things at their disposal that you did not have when you were getting started.
Well said. And like you said, and we didn't have those things. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have internet. We didn't have fast delivery like UPS or personal computers. That none of that existed. When I tell that to my youngest son, he just looked at me one day when he and I said that. He said, "Yeah, Dad, but you had Wi-Fi, right?" You know, so he doesn't get it. So it's hard for people to understand a world like that. And so everything back then, we had to pay for it, didn't we? So to listen to Earl Nightingale cassettes, you had to pay for that. Okay. Today, no, you can get it for free. Just go to YouTube. Tony Robbins, yeah, you can go to YouTube. The turning point in my biggest career in network marketing was 1993 when I was listening to his cassette tapes, Personal Power. And it was 30 cassettes, a cassette for each day, 30 days of empowerment. And today you can get that on YouTube. It's free. You know, Personal Power Day One, Personal Power Day Two. It's free. I mean, I remember that back then it wasn't unusual for us to have a phone bill for $1,000 a month. Today, you could call internet. I just got off the phone with a guy in India just a little bit ago. It cost me nothing, right, to talk to him. And now we can do Zooms internationally and we can see one another and it doesn't cost a thing. I mean, so that's what I'm saying. Back then when we did it, everything cost. And when we wanted to have somebody look at what our company, we would, I mean, didn't you do this, Victor? Mail off a package, you know, fill that. How much those packages cost? I mean, you're talking about postage. If you put a tape in, that's even more, you know, along with the literature, okay? You could spend $10, $15 on a package. And that's to get somebody to look at your opportunity. Today, you just send a link.
Yeah, it's incredible how things have changed. Like you said, you sometimes have phone bills of $1,000. So it seems like back then you really had to be dedicated to make this one to work to really stay here in the long run because of spending all that money. And if you're not getting many results, it's I mean even today people they don't see results, they often quit. But you really had to be very dedicated back then to put in all that money. Like you said, you could do a Zoom call with someone in India and it doesn't cost you anything. So and like you say, you can go on YouTube, watch Tony Robbins, listen to Earl Nightingale, all that is free now, whereas you had to buy cassettes, you know, back then. So it's definitely a much different mindset. So I want to ask you some questions because you wrote a best-selling book called Reaching the Peak, which I read. It's definitely a great read. And what I like is it doesn't take too long to go through it, but you give a lot of share your journey. One of the things you talk about is like for many years you said you treated it more as a hobby in the beginning. You just wanted to make a few extra bucks. And it was like, I think around year 13 or year 14, you start to become serious, more serious about it. So you wanted to talk about a little bit of what made you change your mindset so you want to become more serious? You treat it as a profession instead of a hobby.
Yeah, so that's right. So it was a hobby for many years, maybe 13 years, 14 years, I forget. Anyway, but because I had a cleaning business, you know, so that was my main income. And at that time, I had two major accounts. And in the same year, they decided to cut their expenses. So that meant I had to go. And so for the first time, I had no money coming in. Now, up until that point, yes, it was a hobby. So I like to get together with people, do meetings, do presentations. It was fun. It was great, but I didn't depend on it for an income. And so, but it was extra money. That was nice. But and so when I lost my major accounts and I went into bankruptcy, that's when it came crashing down on me that now I've got no money coming in. What are you going to do? And at that time, and at that time, I don't know if you remember if you remember those days, NSA, water filters. I was in that company at the time. And we got some bad press across the country. And a lot of the leaders were bailing. But at the same time, that product wasn't consumable. And I said, I've got to find a consumable. I got to find a product people buy every month. You know, because the water filters that we used to have the puppy dog approach. We go in their house and say, hey, try this, because people didn't use water filters then. Set a water filter on their sink, said, try it for a week. You like it? You could pay me. You don't like it, I'll take it back. It was that kind of thing, you know. And those things would last 3 years, which means I don't have them as a customer for 3 years, right? So anyway, so when NSA got all the bad press, when my businesses crashed at the same time, that's when everything was like, I knew the whole world was just in the pits with me. And so what I did was I just sat on my porch one day thinking, how am I going to get started? I've got to find a company. Well, I found a company, but I didn't have any money to get started. And so there I was on my porch, just praying about it, thinking about it. Then I looked out on my driveway, saw the only thing left for my bankrupt business was a junk truck. The engine didn't start, but it hit me. I said, that is my ticket. That's my ticket out of here, the junk truck. Of course, anybody, if they knew what I was thinking, they'd think I lost it, right? Mentally. And but I called the junkyard guy and he came out. He said, I'll give you $400. I said, take it. I put 200 into groceries, 200 into products and a distributor kit, and that was it. And after that, I made my list. My sponsor sent me a cell phone. I couldn't get a good reception where I was. So I would drive up in the hills of Tennessee. I remember one day driving up the high, this way up in the hills. And I opened up a cattle gate. I drove into the pasture, closed the gate so the cows wouldn't get out. I got my notes out on the hood and I started making phone calls and making appointments. And people say, man, where are you? I'm hearing cows. Oh yeah, so I like to go out in country. It's very spiritual, you know, nature and all that. And will this Saturday at 1 o'clock be good for you? You do what you can, you know, to survive, you know. But that was it. And so the shift was when my circumstances changed, and I went from hobbyist to I've got to do this. I've got to find a company and make this work. And I'm gonna, if I kill myself doing it, I don't care. But I mean, it's no surrender. And some call that threshold. When you reach a point, it's a point of no return. And you will never, ever go back to your previous circumstances. Sort of like if you saw the movie Gone with the Wind, when Scarlett O'Hara was holding that mud up, when she went back to her farm after the war was over, trying to find a turnip, something in the ground to eat. And she held up that her fist with that dirt, and you saw the silhouette of the sunset in the background. And it was an awesome moment in the movie. And she said, so help me God, I will never be here again. I will never ever let myself experience this again. I will do whatever it takes. That's threshold. And so if someone wants to be successful, you got to get the threshold. And that means get real about your life. Now you don't have to go through bankruptcy, but you got to get real and you need to take stock. You know, if you lost your income today, how long would you survive? How long would you be able to pay your bills and live and all that? And for most people, it wouldn't be more than 30 days.
No, and that's true. And I don't think a lot of people think about their future. They just think, oh, I'll be okay. But you just never know where something may happen
That's
Being
right.
those jobs, it's been happening for years now. A lot of people being let go, and it's still continuing. So you just gotta, like you said, if you gotta let go, how much do you have reserves? Can you live 1 or 2 months? That's a pretty scary thought. So,
Especially it's scary.
yeah, and that happened to you. You gotta let go, and then for many years you had money coming in, but now you do not have that steady money coming in. So basically, you reached that point of no return. You tried a different business. You tried NSA, but they got bad press. And eventually said, how can I, find a real company that's going to really work for me? And you did find one, but at the time you were struggling with money. So that's a common excuse a lot of people use. But you started thinking, where can I come up with the money? And then you were lucky, you saw this junk truck of yours, and you're saying, hopefully someone will give me some money for it. And this junk dealer offered you $400, and you said yes. And you spent $200 on groceries, $200 for a distributor kit, and you got going. You started working on it. You had reached that point of no return, that threshold you were talking about earlier, and you did everything you can to make it work. Unfortunately, where you were, you couldn't. It was the reception wasn't good, so you went to the hills, the mountains, and in that part of Tennessee, and you started making calls and. People heard these cows and other animals. You say, oh, it's more spiritual, but you made the call. Say, hey, can I meet up with you this Saturday? And you just kept making calls again and again and again. So, one thing your story shows is that it's not your situation that determines, it's what you do with that situation. Because you were basically at the point you were pretty much bankrupt, but you found a way to get some extra money. You started that business, and all these years later, now you're an extremely successful person. So a big part is that drive, determination. You hit that threshold, and you were going to make it work no matter what happened because you didn't want to go back. So definitely some really good stuff there, Jeff. So another thing you talk about, let's talk about some of the other things you did to make yourself be successful. You mentioned in the book that one thing you need to do is get comfortable talking to strangers. Now in this industry, all the successful people do that, but for a lot of people, it's very hard. They're afraid to talk to strangers. They're afraid of being rejected. They don't know how they respond. So how are you able to become comfortable talking to strangers, and what would you recommend to the people listening to this interview? How they can become comfortable.
Yeah, so that's it. I mean, because I had a man one time call me and say, I'm interested in this business, but I don't like people. Now, I remember another person saying, this business would be great if it wasn't for people. So here's the thing. I think probably the Bible of network marketing would be Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. That was a book that was most helpful to me. That was a book that I pretty much just put in practice the principles in when I got around strangers, right? And that was it. It was because you got to get people to basically like you, right? But the only way you can do that is if you show that you have an interest in them. That there's something about them that you like, and you take an interest in them. If you take an interest in them, then they take an interest in you. But they're not going to take an interest in you first. So that's the thing. So the thing is, I was talking about this in Ecuador last week. I went to Quito, the city, and there were 400 people at this event, and I was talking about this thing that. The funny thing about people in social media is most people in social media are not social. That's the joke of it, right? But if you want to be great in network marketing, you got to be a very good communicator. But Dale Carnegie's book will help. But it's like I told the people there. I said, you women are better at it than men. Okay, I said, for example, a woman can stand in line at Starbucks and look at another woman's shoes and say, oh, I just love your shoes. Where did you get those shoes? If a guy says that to a guy, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. Okay? Guys got to get more creative. They got to be like, hey, who's your ball team this year? If it's baseball, it's baseball. If it's football, it's football. But you kick off the conversation. And then it's a, and I teach people that. So you have these very short moments with someone you connect with in public. And you say, hey, I enjoyed our conversation. I don't know if I'll ever see you again. Are you in Facebook or Instagram? Oh, yeah. Why don't we add one another and stay in touch? See, that's great because now you got leverage because when you engage in their content and you send them a message, They know who you are. Oh, that's the person I met at Starbucks. Wow, we had an interesting conversation. That's a whole lot better than getting a message from a stranger, right? That you've never met, you don't know. So I'd say that here's the thing that everybody needs to do. Just understand some people you practice on, other people you'll sponsor, but it's never a waste of time. And you get paid on your nose. You get paid on your nose, meaning that even when somebody says no, it doesn't matter because it sharpened your skills when you were prospecting them. And who knows, the no may really be a not yet. And for many people, it is a not yet. So it's never a waste of time. I look at it as all one work. If you go into a job, you might interact with different people. Some you enjoy, some you don't enjoy. But you still get paid, don't you? And so the no's, the yes's, the no's, the yes's, over a period of years, it doesn't matter. It's all one work. You get paid on it anyway. So I get paid on my no's. That's my attitude about it. So I'm not worried about a no. But the thing about it is, for people that are working or struggling in that area, get the book, How to Win Friends, Influence People. Start practicing on people. I did my brother once. Matter of fact, I laid out a printout in front of him showing all these people in my downline. And he told me, he said, don't you try to get me in that. You're not going to get me on that. And I laughed at him. I said, oh, brother, you got it all wrong. I'm practicing on you. Then I'm going to go get me some good people. Go ahead.
I love that. I'm just practicing. I'm going to go get some good people. I love that.
Yep. I'm going to go get me some good people. And somebody say, you have to recruit your family. Oh yeah. You need to do that. Their eyes are getting big. I said, yeah, no, you got to understand. Families are meant to be practiced on. Other people are meant to be sponsored.
I like that. Families are meant to be practiced on. Other people are meant to be sponsored. I love it. Yeah, you got to practice it. And you definitely, I'm glad you mentioned the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Because
most important book.
I definitely agree. It just changes the way you do things because I think an issue is so many people have in this industry, they tend to be too transactional, just focus solely on getting the sale instead of building the relationship. They have to like you first. If they don't know, like, and trust you, you're never right. Going to judge you. So, yeah, you focus on them, take an interest in them, listen to them. They love it because you're focusing on the person they love the most, themselves. When they like you, they're so much more open to anything you have to offer. So you really have to become their friend first. Take interest in, like you said, they're much more likely to take an interest in you, but you need to focus on them first. And once you understand that, things get easier and it gets better. And you're right. Women are definitely better conversations than men. Maybe one reason why the majority of people in this industry are women, because there's so much, like you said, they go up to a person and say, I love your shoes. Where'd you buy them? Yeah, a man cannot do that to another man. So, yeah, we have to do a different way to talk about sports and other things. So, yeah, women are definitely better at that. And you're right. Your no's are never a waste of time. You know, some of it's practice. Some of it you're going to sponsor people, and sometimes it's no, like you said, will mean a not yet. And I guess part of the thing you need to do is you got to be detached from the outcome. Just keep practicing, get better, and the results will eventually take care of themselves. Because the more you practice, the better you'll be at your craft, like with anything. But if you never take action on anything, nothing will change, and you never get better at anything. You can read about it and learn the theory. But the only way to get better is to practice. So I love the fact, just keep talking to people, practice on some, like your family and other relatives, and then the others will come. You'll get more people to sponsor. Another thing you talk about is another thing that changes. You were told to go to South Korea to meet this guy, and that definitely changed your business because now you have this big international business. I don't know, like, I don't know how many countries, like 55, 6, something like that. But talk about that trip to South Korea, which changed your business.
Well, that's an interesting question. And it's one of those experiences that, you know, at that time in the United States, it was okay. But my business was okay. My downline was okay. I was living at the lake, had a lake house. Life was good, right? And but still, I knew, you know, I think at that time, 10 grand a month, you know. And I thought, but yet you'll never get wealthy on 10 grand a month. You know, I said, you have got to find a team. And so the economy was great. Americans were comfortable. What I've learned about network marketing is When times get hard, that's generally when people are open and they're looking. When times are great, they'll buy your products, but a lot of them may not engage in the business. And so I was looking for people who really want to engage in the business. And then I thought the company announced that they were opening in Asia. First country was South America. And I thought, wow, not South America, excuse me, South Korea. And I thought, South Korea, gosh, I've never been anywhere. I mean, I had a passport just to be cool, you know? You know, I'm like, oh, I got a passport. You know, you've been anywhere? No, man, I ain't been nowhere. Anyway, it was like that. And so when they announced that, I thought, I don't know anybody in South Korea. Nobody in South Korea. And I teach this to people all the time. Talk to your leaders if you want to build internationally, okay? And because you'd be surprised. So one guy said, well, I got an email address of a doctor who's been in network marketing in South Korea, but that's all I got is an email address. I said, that will do. And then I emailed him. And then I was at a party one night in South Carolina, and I got the email back from him, and I looked at it, and he said, if you want to do business with me, you must come to Seoul, Korea, and you must come now. And I thought, crap, I hate that. I hate that. And here's the thing. If you overthink it, you won't do it. And I tell anybody out there, you feel that moment where you're extremely challenged, go through the wall. Just go through the freaking wall. Don't think twice. Don't. Because if you overthink it, there's a book called The 5-Second Rule. Read the book, okay? If you think about it much more than 5 seconds, you're not going to do it. And so I told everybody at the party, I said, hey, guys, I'm leaving for South Korea tomorrow morning. And I went down to the airport in Columbia, South Carolina, got a ticket. I didn't know anything. I used to think a 3-hour flight was, oh, my God, that's a long flight. I'm going to South Korea, right? So I mean, from the airport in Columbia till I got to Seoul was 24 hours, you know, a 24-hour experience. And so, yes. And it was, and I thought, I'm just going to go there. I don't know this man. I'm going by faith. And I don't know this man. I'll probably be here a week. And I was there a month. That's how long I was there. I got in his car. When I first met him, he had those round spectacles on, a very serious look. He graduated from Seoul University. He was an intellectual. And so he didn't know me. And he started hitting me with a lot of things. And I said, John, because he had an English name, John. I said, John, I'll be glad to answer your questions, but here's what I want to do. And this goes back to the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. I said, what I'd like to do tonight, our first night, I'd like to go out to dinner with you, and I'd like to get to know you as a person. Would that be okay? And then tomorrow we can talk about all these questions. But let's get to know one another first. And he just looked at me and said, okay. And by the end of the night, we were best friends, which put me in a better position the next day to answer his questions. Yeah. But I was there a month, and then I got in his car and we went all over the Korean peninsula, going town to town, city to city, doing meetings, and he's translating for me. And I'm thinking, this is crazy, man. I'm just a country boy from Tennessee. And now I got this doctor, this medical doctor, you know, that graduated from Seoul University, that I'm running around with, and I'm building a business in South Korea. This is totally nuts. Yeah.
Wow. That is awesome. And, you know, the guy just messaged him and says, you want to do business, you got to come fly out to see me, and you got to come now. And like you said, a lot of people probably in your position would have, like you said, they would have overthought and says, nah, I just can't do it now. You didn't do it. You just headed out. You got on a plane there. You flew out to meet them. And by the way, you mentioned the 5-Second Rule. I agree. That is a great book. Highly recommend it as well. And then, you met up with him and, he started asking these questions. But you said, let's have dinner first. Let's talk about things. And then you applied the principles of how to win friends and influence people. The guy really grew to like you by the end of the night. And you wind up actually spending a whole month there, and then you guys spent the next several weeks just driving all around the Korean Peninsula and talking to all these prospects, all these people. And apparently, he was a medical doctor, I'm sure, who had a lot of people who looked up to him and trusted him and respected him. And all that changed because you took that first step to fly out there, meet with him. You got him to like you, and you made that decision. You didn't overthink it. And from that thing, from that one decision you made, you just grew this big international business. So yeah, like you said, you didn't fall into the trap of analysis paralysis, which stops a lot of people. So it you took the chance, you took action on it, and look, at the very worst, you would have had some good Korean food, things that work out. But things did work out. You wound up spending a month there, which you did not expect at all. So you just never know. You gotta take the chance sometimes, and now you have business all over Asia. So it's definitely something everyone can learn from. Don't be afraid. Don't overthink. Sometimes you're just gonna make that decision within 5 seconds, because a lot of times you overthink, you won't take the necessary action. Another thing I want to talk about is follow-up, because you share a story about this woman who sent you this VHS and these papers, and you were waiting for her to call you to get you in, and she never did. You waited and waited, and then you contact someone else in the company, and that one decision apparently cost them millions of dollars. So it's a very expensive not following up. So you want to talk a little bit about following up and how much it can cost you if you do not follow up, because that happens to a lot of people.
Yeah, so going back to when I was bankrupt and I was looking for a company. Back then, network marketers would advertise in USA Today. And so I answered about 100 ads. And out of 100 ads, only 10 people sent me anything, any information, because that's what they did back then. They sent you information, right? And so I saw this. I opened this package of VHS tape, and it was about a weight loss product and a cleansing tea. Anyway, I popped it in the VCR, and in the tape, all these people were crying, because how fat they were, and how horrible it was being fat, and and I just started laughing because I thought, well, that's a goofy tape. I said, but if that product works, I'm interested in that. If it works, that's all I care about. And but then the application was in that package with the ladies. She signed it and all that, with her information as the sponsor. And but I waited. I said, okay, I'll give you 1 week to follow up. And a matter of fact, I was working this guy had this business, and he was my downline, and he allowed me to have an office space there. And so anyway, I even requested the package in his name. He said, "Why'd you request it in my name?" I said, "Because I don't want them calling me. But I'm bug you, okay?" And so, but I keep asking, "Did she call? Did she call?" No, she didn't call. "Did she call?" No. A week went by. I said, "Okay, you're not going to be my sponsor, because if you can't follow up, you can't follow through. You're not going to be involved in my business and what I do. And I've been signed up before, and I'm not going to be signed up by people who aren't going to appreciate me and put that time in." So I remember calling that company, and I said, "I want the phone number of your number one income earner." And anyway, they gave me his phone number. I called him up, and he said, "Well, I'm not taking any more frontline people." I said, "Well, too bad for you, right? Wow, you just lost a lot of money, didn't you?" And when I said that, and keep in mind, I was as broke as could be. And when I said that, he said, "Okay, I'll take you." Was like that.
I love that. Number one, you made a good point that you gave that lady a week to follow up with you, and she did. And you said if she can't follow up, she can't follow through. She's not going to be there to support you and help you succeed. So that's very telling. So I don't blame you for looking for someone else. He asked her the phone number of the number one earner in the company. You reach out to him. He says, "No, I'm not looking for any more frontline people." And you said, "Well, you just lost a lot of money, and then he changed his mind. And like you said, that was very daring of you, because at the time you were struggling. You were broke, but you did it, and as a result, he took you on. So yeah, you again, there's another example. You took action. You called him. You said, "Hey, You're gonna lose a lot of money if you don't take me. So, and that's a big difference between the people who succeed and people who don't succeed. Now, one of the other things that you accomplished, and not just making yourself successful, but you have, I believe, 200 millionaires on your team. So, you've helped a lot of other people succeed. So, I think one of the things in this industry people don't realize is to become successful, you have to make a lot of other people successful. So, you mind talking a little bit about that? The importance, like, this is a win-win issue. You really need to help other people succeed, help them build their own organizations to become more successful.
Yeah, that's right. So, it's unusual. Like, I've been in the same company for 26 years. So, and how do you have downlines that old, right? Because it's amazing. You develop these friendships through all these decades of time, and then it's just amazing. But the thing is, how you create downlines, or how you get a team to last 26 years, is that you've got to do taprooting, what we call taprooting. And that is tap into the minds of people that are in your team, find out who they know, and basically you're working through your leaders to find better leaders. And when you get those better leaders, you work through those better leaders to get better leaders. And you keep driving that. And keep meeting. Like I said, I was just recently in Ecuador. One of my leaders in the Dominican Republic said, "Would you please go to Ecuador? We really need you there." And I'm like, "Oh, is it convenient? No. Am I really excited about hopping on a plane going somewhere right now? No. But it really doesn't matter. I've never. I'm like, listen, this is what we do, right?" And I'm like, "Okay, somebody needs me in Ecuador. I'll go to Ecuador." And before that, a month before that, I was in the Dominican Republic doing two city meetings over there, supporting a leader, supporting a leader. And I do it on Zooms too. So, it's like, so when we talk about that, it's like one lady I sponsored in Canada, and she wasn't really moving. And so, most people would say, "Well, they're no good. She's not going to do nothing." And then that's the end of it, right? But that's not the way I work. Okay, so what did the book Think and Grow Rich teach us? That more gold has been harvested out of the mine than out of the mountains. So we got to get good at harvesting gold out of the mines. What I want to know is, who do you know? Now, that person may not be good, but who does she know? And so I remember that woman in Canada. I said, "Linda, you've been in network marketing before. Give me one name, one person that you highly respect that you think is awesome." And she said, "Well, I already talked to her and she's not interested." And I thought in my mind, I thought, "Of course, if you talk to me, I wouldn't be interested either." I said, "What is her name?" I wrote it down. "What's her phone number?" I wrote it down. I called her up and I said, "Hey, and I told her, I said, "Linda talked about you, how great, how awesome you are." Again, I'm applying the principles of how to win friends and influence people. "You're great, you're awesome, and all that. I would love to have lunch with you if you give me that opportunity. It'd be great." So she said, "Okay." And then we had lunch. And then and it was a more of, again, applying the book, "I'd like to get to know you and you can get to know me." And then she said, "I really enjoyed lunch. Why don't you stay in the city?" And I said, "Okay, let's do lunch again tomorrow. How about that?" We did lunch, and then the next day. And that was it. She said, "Okay, I'm in. I'm going to join with you." And so I called the lady back, and this was Singapore, by the way. I was in Singapore, and so I called the woman back in Canada, and I said, "Hey, she's coming in. What's your ID number?" She said, "What? Oh, the woman that's not interested. Yeah, she's not interested. She's coming in. What's your ID number?" And interestingly, that woman, and this is a lesson for anybody who thinks, "Oh yeah, Jeff, you flew to South Korea and you had the money to go to South Korea. Most people don't have the money." No, here's the thing. You got to learn how to use your upline. Develop relationships and with your upline, okay? When you know the itinerary of your upline, when they're going to a country and all that, and you know that, you should be hunting in advance to find people in that country to get that person to support you. And that's what I did for Linda. And I did that for Linda on another leg that she has, another team. And here's the truth. For the last 22 years, 23, 24, maybe even, I lose track of time. She'd been sitting on a farm in Ontario, just collecting money, living on a farm, living her life. She didn't go to those countries. And yet the majority of her income comes from international markets.
Wow. Definitely some good stuff there, Jeff. You talk about taprooting, you know, digging into your people downline, you know, because there's gold there. And you
most. About,
Yeah. No, and every taprooter I spoke to says the same thing. It's like you sometimes have to go 3, 4, 5, 6 levels deep. You'll find some real gold there. So sometimes the person you bring in, is they don't do much, and they may stay there, they may even leave, but the people underneath them or the people underneath them, there's a lot of gold in it. You mentioned Think and Grow Rich. More gold's been, dug out of the mines than out of the mountains. And, you're talking about you're willing to fly out to support. You go to different countries. You mentioned the woman from Canada. She wasn't doing much. And, yeah, and you mentioned the fact, this is important. She may not do much, but you know what? She knows people. I think they say on the average, every person knows at least 250 people. So they may know someone who might be a rock star, or someone's gonna be could be very successful joining the biz. So you asked her for someone's name. She gave you the name of this person, and there's a woman in Singapore. You went out to meet her. So and you just first wanted to get to know her. You met up. You had some dinner. You met up again, and then after a while, she was really you. And again, you applied the principles of how to win friends and influence people, and that made all this. Because the thing is, when you apply those principles, a lot of times people have a defense shield. So when they get to know and like and trust you, the shield comes down. Because when the shield is up, it's really hard to get them to join you. So you make them feel cool and make them like you. And you know what? You got it. She says she's interested. You called the woman in Canada. Lindy says, yeah, she's interested. What is your ID number? And she was shocked by it. You got this woman to join. And you mentioned something very important. Use your outline. Develop relationships with them. You know, they're flying out somewhere. You know, maybe they're going to a different country or maybe another state which you never traveled to. You know, build relations with people over there and just say, hey, can you talk to this person there? And most of them, they're willing to do it because, you know, they want to help the people on their team. So relationships are such a huge part of this business. A lot of people don't take advantage. You know, if your upline can help you, don't be afraid to reach out to them. So definitely some really great gold there. So there's some really good stuff here. So as we're getting sort of close to the end of our interview, are there any last minute pieces of advice that you like to leave with people here? Because, you know, some people, you know, maybe some people are interested in becoming network marketers, but they don't know what to do. Or maybe some people, they might have been doing it for a year or two and they're struggling and they're wondering, is it worth it? Because they like the process, but for some reason they're, you know, they may not be doing it. Maybe they're not following up, or maybe it's a mindset issue. Do you have any recommendations for them?
Yeah, it's what we don't do is what's stopping any success from happening. So it's those small actions that we take every day. And then they add up, they just collectively add up by the end of the month. And so the thing is that, you know, it's evolved since the time that I started back in the 70s. We called it multi-level marketing. The word network marketing didn't exist, right, until the internet. And then when we look at what we do today, I mean, it can be a little confusing to people because you say you're in network marketing, but sometimes people think, well, that's computers or if you're prospecting, somebody say, well, I don't know anything about marketing, you know? Yeah. So I really love the fact that social media has changed a lot. There's a bad side to it. That's for sure. But there's a good side to it. And that's what I like to focus on. And it's a tool. That's all it is. It's simply a tool, one of our tools in our toolbox. But really, you know, what we do today is social networking. Because when I'm out in public, I want to be social. I'll push myself. I'll say, okay, Jeff, come on. Engage. Let's see you do it, because you can't get rusty with this. Okay. And compliment somebody, How to Win Friends and Influence People. So compliment somebody about something and then ask them what they do, take an interest in them. And then of course they're going to turn around and ask you, what do you do? And so again, social networking, I want to be social when I'm in public. I want to be social on social platforms, Facebook, Instagram, whatever, and you know, engage with somebody's content, send them a message. Hey, man, I think that's really awesome, your post, you know, that kind of thing. And then finally, you can pop the question, hey, I'll ask them, hey, what do you do for a career, or how do you make your money? I'm just curious, if you don't mind me asking, you know. And then they'll generally, then you can open it up to, are you open to other avenues of income, you know? And most people say, yeah, you know, I always keep my options open, you know. And that's, you know, it's not really that difficult. It just, here's what it comes down to is, I think everybody's got to decide where you are, right? Where you are. And I think you probably heard Larry Thompson talk about this, the 80-15-5, you know, different levels of desire. So some people in your team are going to be, you know, 80% of them are just here for the product and maybe a little extra money. And then the 15%ers are $3,000 to $5,000 a month. The 5%ers are looking for a seven-figure income. So you just got to know, you know, in your team, and you got to know yourself, where are you? Now, I was a hobbyist, right? So me being a hobbyist, I would say that I was pretty much, I don't know, I was between an 80%er and a 15%er. I was interested in more than a few hundred dollars a month. You know, I would probably say I probably went to the 15% bracket, I guess. And anyway, but the thing was, what changed me from being that to going to the 5%er bracket was my circumstances. My circumstances changed. So now I had to get, I had to look for options. I had to look for a way to make serious money. And I was sick and tired of, I didn't want to repeat the past. I didn't want to just get by anymore. My standards had, I raised my standards incredibly. And so the thing is, that's the thing. So we have to be patient with people on our teams. And that is just, they are where they are. Have a culture where you welcome them, you know, and don't reprimand them for being who they are. Welcome them, make them feel warm and fuzzy. And then it's like an incubator, right? Let it go where it goes. And if they decide that they want to up it and they want to move to that 15%, or your 15%ers now want to move to the 5%, then let them do that. But the other thing too, I think is that some people just don't think they deserve that kind of success. You know, and when I look at myself, I only went as far as high school. That was the only thing I ever graduated from because I quit college. So my two brothers were university graduates, my sister, university graduate. So I was the least likely to succeed. The thing that we have to all understand is this, that it really comes down to how bad you want something. And are you willing to get around? Like Jim Rohn said, you'll be the average of the five people you hang around with most. I think in principle that is true, but I wouldn't, you know, I would say that those five people can be in different categories: financial, network marketing, spiritual, family models. Who are the five best in all those categories? That's the way I look at it. And so the thing is, anybody out there is thinking, I'm not probably not going to be good at it. You know, why not get around people that are good at it? I learned if you do what successful people do, then you will get what they get. And that was just a simple common sense thing for me. And I said, okay, I'm going to talk to people who've done well, and then I'm going to find out what they're doing, and then apply it. So the thing is, it really comes down to, you know, how bad you want it. Now, some people may not need it, and they just want to be a consumer. They want to be an 80%er. Fine, that's fine. We welcome you. But I'd say keep looking for those people out there, and they're out there now, because when we look at inflation, where it's at now, I mean, it's crazy what things cost today. Totally crazy. That's affecting people. Some people think, well, then they won't be able to afford the products, therefore network marketing is not an opportunity. No, wrong. You go back to the 70s, Jimmy Carter was the president. Our economy was the pits in the 1970s. It was horrible. I couldn't find work hardly. And that was when I joined FLP. That's when Herbalife started rocketing. Other network marketing companies started rocketing. They rocket when times are bad, not when times are good. So I'd say this is the best time because people are looking for options. So just keep looking for those people. I have one man that was I know we got to go, but one man that was a Facebook friend. All of a sudden I got an email from the company. This guy signed up for me. He's in Hungary. And I thought, what? Hungary? And so I went into my Facebook. I typed his name. Is this guy my friend? Yeah, he is. Oh, okay. Check Facebook Messenger. See if you ever had a conversation. Oh, we did have a conversation, but the last conversation was 6 years ago. Oh my gosh. So I messaged him. I said, hey, did you sign up under me? Yeah, I did. I said, okay. He said, yeah, I keep following you. I keep following you in Facebook because you keep posting stuff. And so long story short, so my wife has a position. So I just moved him under my wife because she needed somebody, right? Anyway, and so I get on a Zoom call with him and I said, let's just talk about this. I said, so, and so I said, what do you really want to do? And he said, I want to go big. Okay, big, okay. I said, okay, then get some of your core people on. Can you do that? Can you think of a few? Yeah. He gets four people on. You know, one's from Spain, another person in Hungary, another, you know, anyway. And so we all talk about it and they said, well, why should we join your company? And I said, okay, I'll tell you why. It was that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Same thing you would do, Victor. Anyway, and so after that, they said, okay, we're going to talk. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Next day, they said, okay, we're coming in. I said, okay, fine, great. I said, here's what I want all of you to do. Now, I want you to get your people on a Zoom call, your core people that you're connected to. They had 28 people on the call the next day, right? And I'm just saying, and they were like, okay, what, you know, and I did a, you know, just did a PowerPoint, and boom, boom, boom. And that was it, man. They're off and running. So here's my point. My point is that never give up on people. Understand that people are watching you. They watch what you post. They don't forget you. And go back to those previous conversations that you've had. Go into your at GoPro Mastery with Eric Ori, we had about 6 months ago. That was the one thing that Eric challenged everybody to do is create conversations. That's all we do in this business is create conversations. So he said, so I want you to get 100 conversations going today. Like, hey man, what's up? Or hey, we haven't talked in a while. Or gosh, I'm embarrassed. We've never talked at all. And we're connected in Facebook. How are you doing? You know, something like that. You just get them going. That's it. And then you get those people to reach back to you. You create those. And here's the thing. If you leverage that on your team, you get your team to do that. Let's say if it's, you know, just 10 or 20 a day that your goal, whatever, it doesn't matter. Whatever your goal is, that's your goal. But you get your team to do it too. It's not 10 or 20. Now, it'll by the end of the week, it's going to be thousands of conversations that you got your team engaged in. One man at GoPro said he did that. And in 1 month, they added 4,000 members in his team. A simple thing, creating conversations. How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. It's golden and it works in social media. So those anybody can do this. It's just doing it. That's it. Just doing it every day. Make yourself do it. Make yourself do it.
That's totally awesome, Jeff. I love that. First of all, we started by saying small actions each day add up over the course of time. There's a compound effect. And that's the power of consistency. People don't realize that. But a lot of people know, they've heard of that if you double a penny every single day for 31 days, you get $10 million. But what a lot of people don't know is if you do it every other day, at the end of 31 days, at the end of 30 days, it's $163.84. That's what lack of consistency can cause. It doesn't seem like much, but it adds up, or in this case, it detracts from you. So with compounds, you double, you get like 30 days, $5 million, 31 days, $10 million. Double every other day for 30 days, you get $163.84. So you talk about being socialist. Totally agree with you on that. It's like network marketing. What's the first word? Network. You have to build your network. You have to talk to people. You be very social, comment people, reach out to people. And you're very good at it. I can tell you, you like people's posts. You engage on their posts. You message people. You're really
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I'd like to see what you're eating.
yeah. Whenever I'm reading you comment a lot of my posts. I definitely pay attention to that. It's one of the reasons why I like you, Jeff. Because I really enjoy talking to you. I love your posts, and I feel appreciated. You apply to friends, how to win friends and influence people. You take an interest in the things that I do. So I can tell you, it definitely works. I definitely love talking to you, Jeff. And you mentioned the 80-15 5 rule from Larry Thompson. Yeah, and you said. Yeah, don't get angry at the 80% that don't do much. They just might have a distributorship. They'll pay whatever the $1,500 a month, because you never know. People have circumstance changes. On the average, someone has a major event happen every 4 years. Could be death, losing their job, divorce, whatever. It happens. And then there's like, I lost my job. You're still doing that thing you were doing. 3 years ago, they were not interested, but you kept in touch with them. And then they're interested, and so be happy, because if you ignore them, they may get upset. They may leave you and join another company. So make them feel welcome, make them feel happy. Same thing with the 15%ers, and of course, definitely with the 5%ers. But yeah, make them feel they're a part of the community. You care for them, you love them, you appreciate them, and you just never know, things can change, because the situation can change 5-10 years from now. And they say, I'm really ready to rock my business now. Help me. So I love that. Yeah, and basically you're saying, how bad do you want? Are you willing to do whatever it takes? And you gave some examples from your life story, how you're willing to do whatever it takes. So, and that's why it's made a difference in your life. And you mentioned the average of the five people from Jim Rohn. You said it could be people from different areas. It could be financial, spiritual. So it could be leaders and all. It has to be all from the same industry. So that was I like that point. It's something to keep in mind. And you mentioned surround yourself with successful people, learn from them. Tony Robbins likes to say success leaves clues. Learn from them, and then that'll definitely help you out a lot. And you mentioned how this guy joined up, and you're this guy in Hungary. You got this notification. You don't remember this guy, but you found a lady who was a friend of yours on Facebook, and you hadn't talked to him in 6 years. But people are always watching. You just never know. A lot of times, people may not even be commenting, but they're watching. Sometimes they don't want people to see that they're liking and commenting your post, and then out of nowhere, like with this guy. He joined you, and then he got some people. You got on a call, and then he got four people on a call. And then the next day, those people got 28 people on the call, and everything just mushrooms. So you just never know. Be consistent, put on the value, and don't worry if you don't always get the likes. I know people get lots of likes, don't have a lot of business going. I know people getting 10 likes a post, and they're making 6 and 7 figures every year. So the important thing is, like you mentioned, people always want you. You just never know. Some people may take 4 or 5 years, but they say, I just love what you're doing. I'm ready to get started. So be consistent. Like you always say, that is so important. Yeah, and again, don't give up on people. So, Jeff, you share so much great value here. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. It's a real pleasure. I enjoyed our conversation. And again, I want to recommend the book, Reaching the Peak, on Amazon. It's a great read. You'll definitely learn a lot about his story and just about the industry as well. And, Jeff, if people want to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to contact you?
Facebook. I said to my youngest son, do you think I should get on TikTok? He said, no, Dad, stick with Facebook. That's for old people.
I love that. Thanks so much, Jeff. Really appreciate it. Have yourself a great day.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please smash that subscribe button so you don't miss any of our amazing episodes. Please also leave a 5-star rating review and have an awesome day.